Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. We annually spend on military security alone more than the net income of all United States corporations. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Yeah. Dwight D. Eisenhower, his farewell address, a very, very important statement by a man who had made his entire career one in the military, showered with honors and accolades, deservedly so, I think, in most cases, for his efforts in World War II in particular, but one who became conscious of the fact that the state can be a threat to the well-being of the American people. And that's sort of the theme that we've been talking about here so far in the program. Hi, I'm Pete Hendrickson. It's my pleasure to be guest hosting Power Hour today. I'm delighted that you folks are with me. I spent the first hour talking a bit about the narrative matrix that we operate in here in the United States. It is a matrix in which our environment, our perception of reality is controlled by various narratives that are spun by people with bully pulpits, people that have voices of enough volume to drown out alternatives. And they do this for the benefit of their programs and their personal interests. And it is the responsibility of the rest of us to not get sucked in to that narrative and to resist that control. As Eisenhower said, we have to retain the knowledge and perspective necessary to keep things in balance. So we spoke a bit about the vaccines safe and effective and all the ramifications and implications and related subject line material to that particular trope. And we talked a bit about the climate change concept as well. And I'm gonna finish off that, you know, my monologue part here with I'm going to read something to you all that that I wrote in the last October or thereabouts. I believe it was last October when we were deep in the pandemic mode, the lockdown mode. Issues were of the legitimacy, the legality of the lockdown edicts were still somewhat in play. In fact, this piece, I think, was produced just before the Michigan Supreme Court issued its ruling that all of the edicts of the Whitmer administration regarding lockdowns and masking and social distancing and what have you were all illegal, all unconstitutional, a status that they have retained even though they've lately been being mouthed by Gretchen Whitmer's public health director rather than Whitmer herself. That is to say, every reason to believe that Whitmer is continuing to issue these things. They're simply being mouthed by the public health director, but that wouldn't matter. Wouldn't matter who's doing it. Neither element of the executive branch is capable of having the authority to do these things. So this piece discusses the power of the state, what the state can and cannot do, and to some degree why. And I hope you'll enjoy it. And after that, after I'm done with this, I'm then going to start taking calls. 844-769-2944 to call in. And we will enjoy your comments and questions at that point. So here are these words. This piece is titled "What Is and What Is Not Within the Power of the State." It is a legal debunk of emergency power pretenses, followed by some commentary on what must and what must not change in the post-COVID-19 world, which is a reference to the Great Reset concept and Building Back Better and a number of other things that many of you will doubtless be familiar with. Americans don't create governments in order to have their lives micromanaged. Americans don't want their lives micromanaged. Nor do Americans empower governments to compel their obedience in any regard other than per authority expressly and deliberately delegated by supermajorities of the population as a whole, after due consideration and debate concerning the relevant area or issue. Further, such authority is always circumscribed by rules as to its scope and the manner in which and purposes for which it can be exercised. In fact, we Americans create governments solely to accomplish a small number of things which the supermajority agrees in advance are needed and feel cannot be properly accomplished by individuals acting alone, or by reliance on the natural and spontaneous dynamics of society. The state, by which is meant here both the federal entity operating out of Washington, D.C. and each of the several states, has no authority to do anything else and can command nothing except as necessary to the accomplishment of that small number of things, and while keeping within the limits of all constitutional prescriptions and proscriptions on its behavior. Everything beyond that small number of things delegated to the state on good behavior and subject to all the rules and restrictions imposed is left to society and the people as individuals. And that small number of delegated things can be withdrawn from the state's portfolio at any time by the people, to whom authority over all of it actually belongs. In no regard and under no circumstances has the state been authorized to act simply as its office holders see fit, and to compel our participation and cooperation with those decisions. Indeed, the state cannot be so authorized under a constitutional system. Here's the Constitutional Law 101 problem with state office holders exercising discretion. Excuse me. Any provision or doctrine purporting to authorize any such thing would have those office holders determining the scope and limits of their authority for themselves. This necessarily and inescapably would mean that such office holders would be exercising authority, quote unquote, which has not been delegated to them. Under such provisions or doctrine, our elected officials would thereby really be rulers, kings and queens, in fact, even if each only in a designated sphere, rather than servants chosen to accomplish specified tasks to which we had set them. Such provision or doctrine would be inherently violative of the sovereignty of the people, and thus void from the beginning. It would also be at war with every principle of constitutional government, in which the state's powers are spelled out for the very purpose of precluding the exercise of indeterminate authority. And the Constitution doesn't simply provide for the selection of officers, leaving all further decisions as to what powers to exercise and how to the wisdom and good character of the angels who would then be chosen by the prescribed methods. Needless to say, however much the chief skill of politicians is the misrepresentation of his or her character, angels are not available to be chosen for these offices. As James Madison dryly put it in Federalist No. 51, observing that limits and controls on the scope of the state's power must therefore be imposed constitutionally, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary. Jefferson put it more bluntly, "Let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution." In light of all the foregoing, it is clear that there is and can be no such thing as an emergency power possessed by the state in a constitutional system. Even our current state's own grand poobahs of presumed authority to determine the state's authority say so. As the U.S. Supreme Court said in Ex parte Milligan, the Constitution of the United States is a law for rulers and people, equally in war and in peace, and covers with the shield of its protection all classes of men at all times and under all circumstances. No doctrine involving more pernicious consequences was ever invented by the wit of man than that any of its provisions can be suspended during any of the great exigencies of government. So, actions outside the provisions of the Constitution amount to a suspension of the Constitution, in which it is specified that the state may exercise no power not expressly delegated to it by the people. As the 10th Amendment to that Constitution, to the U.S. Constitution says, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. The constitutions of the several states contain the same provisions limiting those states to delegated authority. In Michigan's, for instance, we find this as the very first provision of the very first article. Article 1, Political Power. All political power is inherent in the people. Government is instituted for their equal benefit, security, and protection. All power being inherent in the people, the state has none which is not delegated to it by way of the people's constitution. As observed above, open-ended, unspecific emergency powers or other provisions by which the state's officers determine for themselves the scope and limits of their authority cannot coexist with a structure of delegated authority and powers. You can have a king or you can have a constitution. You can't have both. Since state officials only have offices to hold at all by virtue of the Constitution, they cannot exercise the power of kings, even if fires rage and floods follow. Further, and particularly relevant to the matter of alleged emergency powers, in the U.S. Constitution, the very first section of Article 1 specifies that all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and House of Representatives. Michigan's Constitution lays down the same rule as Section 1 of Article 4, which says, except to the extent limited or abrogated by Article 4, Section 6, which provides for an independent citizens redistricting commission, or Article 5, Section 2, which allows the governor to rearrange or reassign functions with the legislatively established executive branch, or within the legislatively established executive branch, subject to approval by the legislature, where having the character of law, the legislative power of the state of Michigan is vested in a Senate and a House of Representatives. And the exclusivity aspect is expressly declared in Section 2 of Article 3 of the Michigan Constitution, separation of powers of government. The powers of government are divided into three branches, legislative, executive, and judicial. No person exercising powers of one branch shall exercise powers properly belonging to another branch, except as expressly provided in this Constitution. So-called emergency powers invariably amount to autocratic powers, that is, decrees purporting to have the effect and authority of general laws, despite being delivered by something other than the legislature. Per the foregoing expressed provisions of both the U.S. and, again, as an example of a state constitution, the Michigan Constitution, this is illegal. It doesn't matter why such powers are usurped, there are no exceptions, emergency or otherwise, which make the usurpations legal. Indeed, the U.S. Constitution lacks the word emergency completely. Michigan's Constitution does contain the term, but only in three places, none of which create an autocratic emergency exception to the separation of powers rule. In short, not even the legislatures, federal or state, can provide or redelegate lawmaking power, for emergency purposes or any other, to any autocrat, whether in the executive branch or elsewhere. In relying on such measures, such as Michigan's governor resorting to the 1945 Emergency Powers of Governor Act or the 1976 Emergency Management Act, autocrats turn to legislation that is flatly unconstitutional. Executives can be authorized by emergency legislation to shuffle workers and assignments in their own branch about, and to create or reorganize or dissolve executive departments and so forth by executive orders and other such autocratic decrees. But they can't be authorized to dictate to the general public as though their declaration of an emergency, or even the legislature's declaration of an emergency, works as an off switch to the Constitution and legitimizes their assumption, or even the legislature's assumption, of the power wielded by Joseph Stalin in the 1930s in the USSR. As John Locke says in his second treatise on government, the legislative cannot transfer the power of making laws to any other hands. For it being but a delegated power from the people, they, who have it, cannot pass it over to others. And when the people have said, we will submit to rules and be governed by laws made by such men and in such forms, nobody else can say other men shall make laws for them. Nor can the people be bound by any laws but such as are enacted by those whom they have chosen and authorized to make laws for them. The power of the legislative being derived from the people by a positive voluntary grant and institution can be no other than what the positive grant conveyed, which being only to make laws and not to make legislators, the legislative can have no power to transfer their authority of making laws and place it in other hands. Indeed, the very issuing of such orders is a criminal attempt to deprive people of their rights under color of law. Any attempt to enforce such orders is likewise criminal. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment and not merely from the date of the decision so branding it. An unconstitutional law, in legal contemplation, is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Such a statute leaves the question that it purports to settle just as it would be had the statute not been enacted. No repeal of an enactment is necessary since an unconstitutional law is void. The general principles follow that it imposes no duties, confers no rights, creates no office, bestows no power or authority on anyone, affords no protection, and justifies no acts performed under it. That's from 16 Am Juror 2nd, section 256, by the way. None of this means that there is no way for America, or portions thereof, to respond to emergencies, of course. It just means that such responses are left in the hands of individuals. Individuals responding to emergencies or exercising any other authority not delegated to any institution may very well choose to act in exactly the way that an authorized state might ordain, or they may not. Either way, they are free to look out for their individual interests in whatever ways seem best to them. Either way, the state can in no way hinder those individual decisions or dictate others in any way outside the normal constitutionally prescribed procedures. Either way, there can be no citizen-affecting laws other than as enacted by the legislature and signed by the executive in the normal fashion. Beyond just the requirement for normalcy in the enactment process, laws enacted during emergencies cannot exceed the normal limits of scope and character to which state power is confined. There can be no special emergency law exceptions. No such law can compromise the citizen's right to travel as he or she sees fit, to assemble as he or she sees fit, to worship as he or she sees fit, or to conduct a business or engage in other honest economic activity as he or she sees fit. In short, no law, even in emergencies, can hinder a citizen in his or her exercise and enjoyment of all rights and liberties unless and until convicted of a normal times crime. Similarly, just as there is no indeterminate emergency power in the state, there is no such thing as a valid continuity of government protocol outside of what is prescribed in the Constitution. If a situation arises in which constitutional prescriptions for the transfer of power cannot be followed, then the state becomes entirely void, entirely without authority in any regard or any office. Indeed, in such circumstances, the state is no longer in existence at all. Whatever happens next will be up to the people, writing on a blank slate. What follows could, and likely would, model or recreate in large part the prior constitutional structure, though with such modifications as would guard against the insufficiencies that led to its dissolution, such as, perhaps, a clearer rendering of the express powers doctrine embodied in its design than is currently provided by the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. But in the meantime, the prior structure and all its works are dust. Any actor coming forth in the interim on the basis of some continuity of government plan or purporting to exercise any other kind of emergency power would be as illegitimate as your neighbor Joe's attempt to exploit the situation and declare himself king. Indeed, it would be the duty of every American to arrest as a would-be tyrant anyone alleging him or herself to be cloaked in authority under some act of the former state. That former state would no longer exist and was never authorized to appoint or establish a post or extra-constitutional continuity of government in the first place. Speaking of duties, let's take in the words of one man whose reasoning and spirit were among the chief guides and inspirations for the American Enlightenment reflected in the Declaration of Independence and the various American constitutions. This particular admonition is especially apropos as we consider how to respond to the current situation here in the land of the free and the home of the brave. And again, this is John Locke. Any single man must judge for himself whether circumstances warrant obedience or resistance to the commands of the civil magistrate. We are all qualified, entitled, and morally obliged to evaluate the conduct of our rulers. This political judgment, moreover, is not simply or primarily a right, but like self-preservation, a duty to God. As such, it is a judgment that men cannot part with according to the God of nature. It is the first and foremost of our inalienable rights, without which we can preserve no other. And the music is coming up. We're about to go to the break. On the other side, we'll take your questions and comments, 844-769-2944. See you then.
What in the world is this crazy Willard water?
It's a proprietary solution, and it's a water additive that was invented by my grandfather, Dr. John Willard, and hence the name Willard Water. Boosts a number of different things. We see most prominently that it's increasing the absorption, utilization, and storage of nutrients in the cells. So, for example, if people were to drink it, we see a big boost in B vitamin absorption utilization. If you see it in plants, we see a big boost in their ability to absorb and retain fertilizers or nutrients in the soil. It's big we see with things like microbes. If you used a microbe on soil, for example, to replenish the soil, and you sprayed our Willard water on it, go through that replenishing cycle much faster.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
If you eat your mammoth food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high-quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
my husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sarah enzyme for the lungs. And my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com, or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Okay, we're back, folks. I hope that that's been enough grist for the mill, that some of you have some things you'd like to say and share on some of these subjects now, and moving on to a couple other items that are current, and maybe provide a little more grist for the mill as well for some of you out there to weigh in. Share a few thoughts about the January 6th commission that has been in the causing a little bit of a kerfluffle in Congress and elsewhere. A proposed commission to investigate the events of January 6th, which is to say to create the appearance that there is something that needs investigation. This in and of itself is a part of the narrative matrix. This is an effort to, again, to take it for granted or present as though it can be taken for granted that there was something more than just a rally at the Capitol on the 6th. Partly as a consequence of Donald Trump giving a speech, and partly because of what was going on in the Capitol at the time, which has been mischaracterized, in my opinion, wildly mischaracterized as an insurrection or even or as a riot. I think that the riot thing is closer to the mark based on things that went on. But here's some thoughts that I've had on this subject. Why is it that 14,000 hours of video from the Capitol on January 6th, of which we've recently learned have never been released to the public, haven't been? When so much politicking and even public policy decisions have been based on what purportedly happened in that place and on that day, it is self-evidently imperative that all that can be known about those events be in the public domain for public analysis and consideration. Only, it seems to me, only an illegitimate agenda can be served by keeping the people in the dark, and it is a practice that not only screams of deception, but is guaranteed to produce suspicions and divisions. Isn't that how it's working for you when you know that there's a lot of video and it is simply not being released? Isn't it like the natural thing to assume that this is because it shows something that those who are holding it back would find inconvenient to have aired? It's kind of similar in character, I think, to the failure of the government to ever release all those those Pentagon surveillance camera videos of the 9/11 events. There are many, many tapes that simply disappeared. In fact, the feds made a point of going around to all the private businesses in the area that might have had a camera on the place where the Pentagon was purportedly hit by an airplane that left no marks on the ground. And confiscated those videotapes. So, a very curious and deceiving thing. You know, it's my understanding, maybe I'm wrong about this, and I only get this from people that I know that knew people who went to the Capitol that day and so forth. But my understanding was that people went to the Capitol on January 6th in order to encourage Congress, by their presence outside, as in any protest event, to hear the evidence of election fraud some members had prepared to air before the whole body of Congress prior to the decision on whether to certify the election results as they were as offered by the states. Those few folks who went inside the Capitol did so at the invitation of Capitol Police. We've seen those videotapes, or at least with the cooperation of the Capitol Police. Again, we've seen those tapes, many of those tapes. Undoubtedly, there are many, many other tapes or videos that show that in even greater detail and make it more clear. But I've seen videos myself of the Capitol Police moving the barricades, opening the doors, inviting people in. And after all, I mean, the place is it's a tourist destination. I assume that it was open for normal business at that time in that regard, and people went inside. So notably, I think, no one participating in the protest or among those who went into the Capitol is even alleged to have had a weapon, for instance. And obviously, insurrections don't happen by unarmed people. There was obviously some bad behavior committed by some of those people who had gotten into the Capitol. We saw some of those tapes, some vandalism, some shouting, some banging around, not a great deal of damage that I ever saw, frankly. I have to reserve the thing about even vandalism, because other than a couple of broken windows, that were videotaped, there were, people, for some reason, trying to go in through windows in the back of the Capitol when the doors in the front were wide open, that did apparently happen. But most of the people who went in just toured through like regular tourists and then left. We have that on videotape as well. And all of which raises the possibility that the people who did behave badly, the people who were crashing about a little bit I understand like a laptop was stolen and some other things of that kind, some souvenirs taken in a manner of speaking. Those folks may actually have been agents provocateurs, there to create the appearance of a violent riot by Trump supporters. which, you know, the image of which could then be exploited by people seeking political capital in the pretense that an insurrection had been underway, of which there is an obvious interest. We've been hearing that word insurrection continuously for all the time since January 6th. So, you know, this is serving somebody's interests. At some point in the events of that day, Ashley Babbitt was murdered by a Capitol police officer for no apparent reason. This, you know, opens the possibility that this was actually done in order to inject violent energy into the protesters who were on hand in furtherance of this insurrection narrative. I don't know that this is the case, of course, but, you know, I have to wonder. There was no explanation that seemed credible for why Ashley Babbitt should have been shot. She wasn't threatening anyone. She wasn't armed. She wasn't near anybody, even. She was surrounded by police at the time that that she was shot, and all she was doing was climbing through a window that other people had broken. And again, no one in front of her who she could have harmed, even if this little, you know, slender little woman could have harmed anyone without a weapon anyway. And yet someone just pointed a gun at her and killed her. And the only thing that got accomplished from that, as near as I can tell, is that word went out quickly that that people are being shot. And that would certainly have energized a lot of craziness on the part of people who were there on hand. Meaning only to, be a protest rally, but perhaps that's the sort of thing that could turn it into what looks more like a riot. So I want to see that 14,000 hours of video, and I think that everyone else ought to, and ought to want that as well, and I hope that comes out. So again, if anyone wants to weigh in and share some thoughts on that subject, 844-769-2944. We have a few minutes left in which someone can get a few words in if they wish. Here's another thing that's current in the news today. I learned yesterday that June is Pride Month. And, you know, I'm not gonna get Neanderthal about any of that here. I'm not that way, and that's doesn't need to be done. But I have just a question that some might mistake for this, because any issue that's raised in connection with this sort of thing tends to get viewed gratuitously by people who choose to take a certain perspective. They tend to view anything as being hostile. But I have a problem with the use of the term pride and Pride Month. And, you know, pride is a thing that is to which one is entitled by virtue of an accomplishment, by virtue of attaining something through effort, through hard work, discipline, nose to the grindstone. Pride is not something that just you get just because, you know, you showed up. And so I have an issue with the use of that expression, the use of that word, pride here. Why not just call it, you know, Celebrating Gayness Month or Transgender Month or whatever else is on the table for supposed inclusion under the umbrella of the pride thing, which I think all those are. I am by no means an expert on any of that, and don't claim to be, but I really think that word pride ought to be shelved and something else brought in its place. So, one other thing. I actually have two other things here. I actually wrote these both as questions in my most recent newsletter. And I maybe some of you will find them as curiosities worthy of note, as I did. Right now, we're awaiting the release of a statement or a presentation on the subject of UFOs. The Defense Department has now purportedly acknowledged its units have been filming UFOs for decades. That they appear on a daily basis around U.S. military installations, and we've been made privy to a few videos of these UFO events, and I find that all very fascinating. Certainly, you know, it's a mystery that intrigues the imagination, and whether it represents aliens or who knows what, it doesn't really matter. It's fascinating nonetheless. But I have a question. Why is it that every UFO video of all of those lately being released in great numbers by the Defense Department, along with those assertions that UFOs have been being seen on a daily basis near these military installations for years, why do all those videos look like they were filmed on a 1950s black and white handheld Super 8? There's no color, unless it's the green of night vision equipment, which you see in a couple of them. They're all blurry. They're static. They don't, in the sense they don't have any zoom deployed in any of them. And you would think that that'd be the very first thing you would do if you caught sight of a UFO off in the distance. You'd zoom in on it and try and read the manufacturer's marks off the thing. These videos, the way they're presented, they look like the reason all the previous presentations of supposed UFO videos were dismissed as fakes. They look exactly like that. And yet we're to understand that these films are being shot from a multi-million dollar military equipment, you know, fighter planes and ships at sea. And they have to be assumed to have decent quality cameras. Why are they only producing these crappy videos that are not even a tenth of the quality that my little smartphone would make? I am genuinely mystified by this point. Mystified to the point of having fears that even this, you know, Defense Department acknowledgement bit is some kind of a hoax. I hate to say it. Like I said, the whole subject fascinates me, as it does, I'm sure, you know, many other people. But this is not selling the project very well when these crappy videos are made. So that's one thing. Again, you know, if you care to share any thoughts on that one, we have just a couple minutes left here. I'm going to share one other thing that also is on my mind, and that is this. Why is it that no one has produced a comparative analysis of the net carbon footprint or environmental impact of the full charge production and the prorated battery disposal for an electric vehicle versus a tank full of gasoline, with maybe a sidebar detailing the footprint impact, footprint slash impact of the necessary support infrastructure? That is, charging stations and so forth, that infrastructure build out for electric vehicles. Isn't that comparison highly relevant in light of the push in some quarters for not only a rollout of electric vehicles, but the ambition of replacing all gasoline powered equipment with these electrics? I think this is like self-evident that this question, is of significant importance right now. And I want to actually last night reading some work by some other people whose stuff I appreciate. I actually saw some answers to a couple of those questions I want to share with you. One of these, this comes from a column by George Will that he recently published titled Biden's EV Tax Credits Redistribute Wealth Upward. And he notes that And according to the International Energy Agency, just producing the battery for an electric car can emit almost a quarter as much of the greenhouse gases that a gasoline car will emit across its entire lifetime. So the battery by itself, producing that battery, equals 25% of, or in the neighborhood of 25% of the carbon footprint, you know, the bad side of driving a gasoline car over the entire life of that gasoline car. It also was pointed out here that, and he doesn't get into, unfortunately, you know, where the battery charge mechanism comes down as compared to the footprint of a gallon of gasoline, but it does point out that 19.3% of the electricity that is produced is from coal-fired plants, and so that's at least, you know, what's going into these electric vehicles. So I would like to see a comprehensive set of figures here so we could see if this actually makes any sense at all to do this, and it isn't just a matter of some people having made some nice investments in the electric vehicle market. All right, we have a caller.
My name's Mike. The reason that the pictures are so blurry is that those fighter pilots are only allowed to use 8mm home movie cameras. Have a good day.
That appears to be the case, doesn't it?
Yeah. All right.
They can't pry their smartphones out of their pockets and use those instead, which would, you know, be better. Yeah. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate that. Okay, so to finish up on the electric vehicle thing there, really would like to see this. Really wonder about whether or not the battery production, the electricity that's needed to power these cars, and more particularly, perhaps, the cost that will be involved in building out what I think Biden is saying he wants 500,000 recharge stations to be built now across the country. That's a pretty high impact operation, and it's going to definitely ding the any benefit that could possibly be seen from having these vehicles out there. So look. I'm Pete Hendrickson. My website, LostHorizons.com, you can find more things about the Narrative Matrix and other things that you might find of interest. I appreciate everyone being with me here today. We're about to hit the end of the hour, and next week I'll be back the same time. I'm going to have as a guest someone with a very fascinating story to share about his experience in applying the actual truth about the income tax and encountering an increasingly exposed corrupt State Department of Revenue in response, even while having been properly treated by the feds. That's going to be a great story. I hope you'll all join me at that point. And meanwhile, we are about to disappear, so with that, here's what I have to say.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
What in the world is this crazy Willard water?
It's a proprietary solution, and it's a water additive that was invented by my grandfather, Dr. John Willard, and hence the name Willard Water. Boosts a number of different things. We see most prominently that it's increasing the absorption, utilization, and storage of nutrients in the cells. So, for example, if people were drinking, we see a big boost in B vitamin absorption, utilization. If you see it in plants, we see a big boost in their ability to absorb and retain fertilizers or nutrients in the soil. So we see with things like microbes. If you used a microbe on soil, for example, to replenish the soil, and you sprayed our Willard water on it, go through that replenishing cycle much faster.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
If you eat your man of food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high-quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs, and my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com, or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with olive oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that olive oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.